So the topic of my speech today is the outlook for business investment in Australia. So let me thank Bloomberg for the invitation to speak to you all here today at this summit. Today I'm going to review the outlook for business investment in Australia, given the very important bearing it has on our forecast for the economy overall. Business investment in Australia is now, as a share of GDP, is now higher than at any other time in the past 60 years. There we go. So, there it is. Higher than at any other time over the past 60 years. This reflects, though, two quite different trends. On the one hand, we have investment in the resources sector, which has been building consistently from around the mid-2000s, when the prices of Australia's key commodity exports began to rise significantly. On the other hand, non-mining business investment declined from about 2008 to about 2010 in real terms and has remained relatively low as a share of nominal GDP since then, as you can see here. This outcome reflects a number of different influences, to which I'll return in a minute. I should stress, though, at the outset, that the relatively low levels of investment outside of the resources sector, including dwelling investment, that has been part of the way in which the Australian economy has adjusted to the unprecedented boom in commodity prices. Now, if that had not been the case, the strength of demand might otherwise have led to a period of higher inflation and all the problems that come with that. Instead, inflation has remained at or close to target, and economic growth has been close to trend. And so this has been a good outcome for the macro economy as a whole, particularly when we compare it to much earlier commodity price booms that we've experienced. But the peak in resource investment is now close. Once it's passed, the decline in mining investment and the effect of the still high level of the exchange rate and ongoing fiscal consolidation, those things will weigh on economic growth. And so this provides scope for other sources of demand to pick up. Some of that will come in the form of strong growth in resources exports. There we go. For bulk commodities, where much of the investment has taken place, exports have already been growing strongly, and this is expected to continue, as you can see here. In particular, exports of LNG are expected to grow very significantly as new production facilities come online from around 2015. Now, while this is a welcome boost to exports and that will help to support the growth of GDP, the demand for labour in the resources and resource-related activities, that should wane as the sector moves from the investment to the operational and less labour-intensive phase of the resource boom. As you know, there's been a significant easing in monetary policy starting in late 2011. There are signs that the low level of interest rates is having some of the expected effects, and these are likely to have further to run. The effects are clearly evident in the established housing market, and as I've discussed at some length in a recent speech on that topic, this should help to underpin further moderate growth in dwelling construction. As for non-mining business investment, we expect that this will also grow moderately in real terms over this year and next. And as always, uncertainty around these forecasts is considerable. Part of that comes from the fact that we receive the data with some lag, but it's also because the data is subject to revision for some time. Indeed, those revisions are typically much larger for business investment than for many other components of expenditure in the national accounts. So with that caveat in mind, I'll turn to a discussion of what's been happening to mining and non-mining investment of late and what the likely outlook is for both. Let me just start with mining investment. So as you can see here, commodity prices fell sharply around the middle of 2012. That's this recent dip, reaching a low point in September of last year. So this had a noticeable effect on the resources sector. Some companies scaled back their investment intentions and reduced spending where possible to preserve their cash flows. And although the prices of bulk commodities are now above those low points reached last year, mining companies indicate to us and publicly that they remain focused on containing costs and that for some, obtaining finance for new projects remains difficult. Now, during the years that commodity prices were growing rapidly, there was a tendency for forecasts of mining investment to just be revised upwards as the stock of projects under consideration and the flow of these into commitments increased. In contrast, of late, the prospect of sizable new commitments, though still present, appears much less for the next few years than was the case in the past decade. Instead, I think the rate of progress on existing projects and any further cost overruns are likely to have a much more important bearing on the profile for mining investment in the near term. For some projects, most notably in the LNG sector, there've been delays associated with logistical problems that affect a number of these very large, very complex undertakings. Any further delays there, that will reduce investment now, but add to it later on. Also, cost overruns, to the extent that they reflect the need for more work than companies originally planned, those represent extra investment. So that's not great from the point of view of shareholders in resource companies, but it's extra investment nonetheless. And while the exact timing of the peak in mining investment and the profile thereafter are uncertain, there is still a sizable amount of work in the pipeline, including a number of large LNG projects. And so this means that the level of mining investment is likely to remain quite elevated for a time. Now, our assessment at the time we published the February statement on monetary policy was that mining investment was likely to peak around 8% of GDP sometime this year and then stay at that high level for a bit beyond that time. We're in the process of reviewing our forecasts ahead of the publication of the May SMP. At this stage, there's not been a lot of new information relevant to mining investment. We've seen spot prices of iron ore decline, but this was widely expected, and that followed a period when prices had a larger than expected jump around the end of 2012. Also, we've had the latest capital expenditure survey by the ABS that was released in late February. Now, on the surface, it suggests that mining investment could actually rise from the current financial year to the next. While that's more optimistic than the outlook implied by what companies say publicly and what our own liaison tells us, it does highlight the fact that there's the outlook for mining investment is one that still remains uncertain. So that's mining investment. Let me turn to non-mining business investment. As I've already mentioned, non-mining business investment, it's currently at relatively low levels as a share of GDP. The high level of the exchange rate associated with the resources boom, that's been an important mechanism that's facilitated the reallocation of labour from capital, labour and capital to firms in resource and resource-related industries away from other trade-exposed industries. However, the high exchange rate, I don't think that's been the only part of the story. There have been other forces which have tended to weigh on non-mining business investment over recent years. So the global financial crisis that obviously caused a significant disruption to economic activity globally, and it increased uncertainty about demand conditions. Also, if we go back even before the crisis, households had started to increase their rate of saving, while the level of household debt and housing prices, they stabilised and even declined somewhat as a share of income. And that followed a very long period of declining saving, rising debt and rising house prices. The transition to this more sustainable behaviour on the part of households, that led to a period of weakness in non-resource construction, a decline in turnover in the established housing market, and slower growth of consumption compared with that seen through much of the 2000s. Now, while many of these factors remain in place, they may weigh less heavily on business conditions and hence business investment in the period ahead. In particular, the low level of interest rates and the rise in asset prices that have underpinned a rise in net worth of households, those things are likely to support growth of dwelling investment and consumption by households. There's been, as I mentioned, a noticeable improvement in conditions in the established housing market, and dwelling investment picked up over the second half of last year, with further moderate growth expected ahead. and that in time should provide a measure of support to employment and activity in the non-mining business sector. Also, consumer confidence has increased since last year to be above average levels currently. Now, I don't think that means that consumption growth is going to return to the very strong pace that we saw prior to the financial crisis, but it is consistent with consumption growing at least in line with incomes and at a stronger pace than was observed towards the end of last year. Indeed, stronger retail sales data since the beginning of this year support that outlook, and higher consumption growth, it will also help to support business activity and investment. I don't think we should be too surprised by the fact that business investment turns up after household spending through the business cycle. This is natural. This occurs because firms can respond to any pickup in demand first by making use of any spare capacity they may have, while greater sales, improved cash flows will, in time, encourage them to invest. The low level of interest rates at the moment is currently, at the moment, is also providing a direct measure of support to business investment via its effect on the cost of capital. So we've seen the rise in equity prices since mid last year, and that's helped to push down the cost of equity finance. Also, interest rates on outstanding business loans. You might want to try that one for me. Interest rates on outstanding business loans are only just above the 2009 trough for large businesses, shown in the lower panel, and are below the 2009 trough for small businesses in the upper panel. Lending to unincorporated businesses has been growing steadily over the past year or so, and larger businesses, they generally have access to business loans or non-intermediated funding on reasonable terms. Indeed, if you look at equity and debt funding for private non-financial corporations, that equity and debt funding as a share of GDP has increased a little from 2011 into 2012, and they're currently close to or at the average of the past two decades as a share of GDP. Meanwhile, businesses have access to internal funding. Non-mining profits as a share of GDP, they're not much below the average of the past 15 years or so. And so in short, the way I see it, businesses overall have access to funding, both internal and external, on reasonably favourable terms. Now, of course, that's not true for all businesses, and we're more than aware that some businesses have found that loans are more difficult to come by or only on less favourable terms than they had been used to prior to the global financial crisis. However, I think some tightening in the availability of credit since that period is to be expected, and that reflects more prudent behaviour, lending behaviour by institutions. So while the high level of the exchange rate, that's weighing on trade-exposed industries, it's also worth mentioning that it helps to keep down the cost of imported capital. So that's going to benefit firms investing in machinery and equipment, which constitute a large share of non-mining business investment. Having said that, non-residential building activity currently remains relatively subdued, but prospects are that investment in building and structures outside of the resource sector will pick up gradually. I think one thing in favour of that is that the current growth of the population around 1.7% annually will provide some support for demand. Because not only does population growth add to demand for new goods and services, it also gradually eats into any existing spare capacity that might be hanging over some industries, and it provides an impetus for investment in new capacity. So while non-mining business investment... There we go. While non-mining business investment, previously I showed it to you as a share of GDP, and it was relatively low as a share of nominal GDP, as this chart shows, it has been growing in real terms, in trend terms, over the past 2 years. So there has been growth in non-mining business investment in real terms. The profile for real non-mining business investment since late 2011, so that's the blue line shown there, labelled September 2011, when the bank started cutting interest rates, that lies somewhere in between the profile of investment during other episodes of declining interest rates. So far, during the current episode, the growth of non-mining business investment has been less than it was during the early 2000s and the mid-1990s, those upper lines. but it's more than it was during the financial crisis and the early 1990s recession. Our forecasts that we had in the February S&P, they embodied moderate growth in non-mining business investment, which would, if it comes to pass, place the current episode somewhere in between these four earlier episodes. Perhaps the key piece of news for non-mining investment received since February has also been the ABS Capital Expenditure Survey. And what that does is it provides an estimate of what firms' investment plans are for the rest of this financial year and the first reading for 2013-14. And overall, what the firms have told the ABS is consistent with non-mining business investment remaining subdued this financial year, but then gradually picking up over the next. So not really very different from the picture I just tried to paint. So let me conclude then by saying that our expectation is there'll be a gradual recovery in non-mining business investment and further moderate growth of dwelling investment. And while many of the drivers of investment support such an outlook and low interest rates are playing their role, the profile for non-mining business investment remains uncertain, including because of the high level of the exchange rate. The profile for mining investment, that also remains uncertain, though it appears that the peak in mining investment is likely to occur this year. And if we pull all of that together, that suggests that growth for the economy as a whole will be a little below trend this year and then pick up gradually through next. So let me close there. Thank you very much.
And now for a special interview, we have Michael Heath, who is our Asia economy reporter based here in Sydney.
Thanks very much for that speech, Chris. I just wanted to kick off with where you ended. You're forecasting a pickup in growth in 2014 to just under 3%. Are you being too optimistic predicting there that domestic industries like construction can take up, can fill the breach from a once-in-a-century mining boom?
Well, that's a good question. I think the first thing to realise is that it's important to consider not just that mining investment will be reaching a peak, but that it's expected to still stay high for some time. So there's not as much to feel if you take that into consideration. And then the second thing, I think I just go back to what I just mentioned. The ABS, their capital expenditure survey, they go out to firms and say, what do you actually plan on spending? Now, it's not precise to translate that into what we think will actually be realised in time. But, as best we can tell, and even taking account of current business conditions, what that survey tells us is that firms plan to sort of, for investment to remain sort of subdued, is how I'd characterise it, this financial year, but then gradually pick up through into next financial year. And that combined with some of these other things is the dwelling investment, for example, I told you, consumption growth picking up a bit from the softer levels late last year. Those things are sort of sufficient to see growth a little below trend sort of this calendar year and then gradually recovering next.
Is it fair to say that the easing bias that you've maintained this year, is that an insurance policy in the event that it doesn't all go as planned? Could we characterise it like that?
I never like to think of it as an insurance policy. I'm not sure that that's a helpful analogy. Insurance policy is something that evokes a sort of protection against something catastrophic, something really nasty happening. Well, if something really nasty was to happen, there is room there for the bank to respond as required, as they've done in the past. But it's true to say that, currently with inflation remaining reasonably well contained and certainly a bit below the midpoint of the target and expected to, at the current assessment, to remain at target over the next little while. With that in place, there's, the board's made it clear that there's scope to ease monetary policy further should that be necessary. But that's the important question.
Mm-hmm. The other issue you touched on was the currency's strength. How much of a risk that the persistent strength of the Aussie dollar could derail your efforts to rebalance the currency? I mean, you've mentioned it's a drag on growth.
Yeah, well, so that's been in place for a while now, and we've seen, that's a very painful process for many trade-exposed industries and many firms there. But there has been, quite a bit of evidence that those industries are sort of responding. As I said, sometimes that's very difficult. But the economy, you know, has had this high exchange rate for a while. You know, unemployment remains relatively low. Growth over the 2012 year as a whole, that was close to trend. So far, I think it's a risk and it's something we'd be attentive to, and that's the reason why we look at things carefully and reevaluate things from month to month. But at the moment, you know, I don't see evidence for us to sort of need to change those forecasts. But there is a risk there.
Mm-hmm. But you have said in the past that the currency's strength is influencing the level of the exchange
rate. Oh, absolutely. I think we've said on numerous occasions that the exchange rate has been reduced with the high level of the exchange rate in mind, which is to say it's lower than it otherwise would be if the exchange rate wasn't so as high as it was. So monetary policy's done its best. It's very hard to calibrate these things, but it's done its best to try and take that into account.
Mm-hmm. Another issue, we've seen some of the pickups in data that you mentioned, consumer confidence, retail sales, house prices, that would indicate rate cuts are having the desired impact, yet business confidence and credit growth remain subdued. I mean, how do you account for that divide? Is it just lagging indicators?
I think I tried to give that sense in my speech. There's a footnote there that makes a sort of more technical reference to what I was trying to say in the speech, which is that if you look back over a long period of time and you try and look at cycles in household consumption, cycles in dwelling investment, and cycles in business investment, and in the past, mining wasn't really a big part of that, so ostensibly that's talking about non-mining business investment. If you go back and look at these cycles, invariably it's the case that consumption and dwelling investment turn up. In other words, they trough and then start to turn up before business investment. And I think that makes sense. You know, businesses see they've got capacity in place, there's less demand for that when things are a bit slower for them in a particular sector or across the whole economy. And then there's no point in sort of rushing ahead of consumers and return in terms of consumption and dwelling investment. They can let the spare capacity be sort of soaked up, and then in time they tend to invest. That's why it tends to lag. So that's the norm.
Say in time, is there sort of a time frame you'd be looking at?
Oh, well, it varies a lot from one cycle to the next. But as I said, I think the surprising thing is I often sort of look at that business investment as a share of nominal GDP. I think it's a helpful way to look at it, but it sort of takes away from the fact that real business investment in the non-mining sector, that has been, you know, it's quite volatile, but it has been growing in a trend sense for a couple of years after it declined sharply following sort of the GFC. So there is that growth there, and then, as I've already mentioned, the ABS, they hear from firms that their plans, broadly speaking, are for gradual increase in business investment.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Just want to take you back to the currency for a moment. And you mentioned that it seems that businesses are adjusting because it's been elevated for some period of time. Is that part of the improvement in productivity that we've seen? Does that dovetail with that as well?
Well, I think the improvement in productivity that we have seen, and you know, we've seen that in the national accounts, a big question there is whether it'll be sustained at these sort of recent growth rates. But the improvement there is something you'd expect, right? Businesses in a number of industries are under quite a degree of pressure. Part of that's because of the exchange rate. It's when businesses are under pressure that they think very carefully about how to sort of how they can best organise their affairs to be as efficient as possible. So they economise on labour where they can. They try and do things better. Some of the businesses, it's very unfortunate, but those that are sort of not doing well and are not surviving, they go out of business. But that new ones come in, and what's happening, of course, is those that are going out of business tend to be less efficient than those that they're being replaced by, and that's the natural process through which productivity growth occurs.
Mm-hmm. We saw this week Holden announcing that 500 jobs were cut, and the yen is falling further as Japan's reflation policies take effect. I mean, will Australia have a car industry at the end of this decade? What's the prognosis?
That's a good question, and I'm in the fortunate position of saying I am very much a macroeconomist. We do pay very close attention to particular developments in industries because I think that's part of building a macro picture. You don't always just wanting to be looked from the top down. Sometimes you want to build from the bottom up. Having said that, it's not for me to say or try to guess where we'll be in 10 years on that score.
Mm-hmm. Just wanted to ask, is there any questions from the floor?
There is actually. There's been a lot of criticism and sackings over the LIBOR scandal. How is the central bank's interest rate manipulation any different to the LIBOR rate manipulation? I apologize.
Oh, gosh. Well, that's... I'm not sure I really quite understand the question. I don't think we sort of... You know, we're quite plain in what we do. We make our announcements very clearly. When we intend to move the cash rate, we do that at 2:30 the first Tuesday of every month that the board meets. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a very transparent and open process, and maybe I should just leave it at that on that question.
Okay, another question. We live in this world of zero rates in the U.S., Japan, very close to zero in Europe. How much of a challenge is this for any central banker of a major economy in terms of managing the economy, but also just absorbing these liquidity flows?
Well, I'll speak on the question of management. I think it is a difficult task, and I mentioned the difficulty in trying to calibrate interest rates so as to get the right settings in place to have, stable growth close to trend and while maintaining low inflation. It's difficult when others are doing such extreme things. Those are things that their economies, need. But the high level of exchange rate, I think the best thing for me to say is we've tried to take that into account in the setting of monetary policy. We've reduced interest rates more than we would have otherwise if the exchange rate hadn't been so high. So those are the settings we have. That's the hand that the world has dealt us, and we're doing the best we can.
So intervention isn't on the cards?
Well, the governor's made some comments on a number of occasions, including in parliamentary testimony, when he's made it clear that the system we have in place is one that served us pretty well for quite a while, and that we're really quite a long way from having to consider those sort of more extreme measures, including because interest rates, are still in Australia at reasonable levels compared to elsewhere. So there's room to cut should that be necessary.